Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shir Shaiwitz. Today we'll be studying Zechariah chapter 12, Perek Yud Bet. So Zechariah Perek Yud Bet continues the series of prakim that we've been reading, which are Nevuot of the Geula, of the future redemption, and specifically chapters 12 through 14 describe a war in Israel by all the other nations. This war actually is similar to the war that Yechezkel described in chapters 38 to 39, if you want to go back to those podcasts. But Yechezkel described the war of Gog Magog, where all the nations of the world will come up against Israel, and through Hashem's protection, Israel will survive. So it's a very powerful apocalyptic description of a future war, a future redemption, and there's many echoes of those chapters in this description. Okay, so let's take a look. Pasuk Aleph, Masad Devar Hashem al Yisrael, Ne'um Hashem. This is Hashem's pronouncement, his utterance to Israel. And who is Hashem? Noteshamayim Yosed Aretz V'Yotzer Ruach Adam B'Kirbo. Hashem is the one who stretches out the heavens and established the earth and created humanity, created people. And I think part of the goal of this war, which is what happens also in the war of Gog Magog, is that Hashem's glory is revealed to everybody, and that will happen as well in this war. And we get that right from the beginning in this description of Hashem. And Hashem says, Hine anochi samet Yerushalayim saf ra'al l'kol ha'amim saviv. Yerushalayim will be like kind of a bowl of poison to all of the nations that surround her. Meaning, Yerushalayim is going to be protected. How will Yerushalayim be protected? If anyone starts up with her, it's as if they're drinking poison. It's a very similar image in Pasuk Gimel, where it says, V'haya b'yom ha'hu, on that day. Those are words also that come up a lot in these next few chapters. On that very day where this happens, Asimet Yerushalayim even ma'amasa l'chol ha'amim, kol omseha sarot yisaretu. Anyone, Yerushalayim will be like a stone that if anyone tries to lift it, that stone will injure them. They will be scratched. It will be heavy. So Yerushalayim is protected because like that heavy stone or the stone that will scratch somebody or the poison, they're untouchable. Then we go into the description of this war. V'na'asfu aleha kol goyei ha'aretz. Again, the emphasis on all the nations of the world are coming against her. And Pasuk Dalid, how does it happen? Bayom ha'hu. Listen to the rhyming in this pasuk. On that day, Ne'um Hashem, Ake kol sus batimhon v'rochvo b'shigaon v'chol sus ha'amim ake b'ivaron. So the horses and the chariots, that's the kind of the image and the weapons of the enemy. But Hashem says, I am going to intervene. I will create panic among the horses. I'll create madness. I'll create blindness. And Hashem says, except for Beit Yehudah, that's the middle of the pasuk, when he says that that the Amim will be struck with, the horses of the other nations will be struck with blindness, but he says, Va'al Beit Yehudah, but Yehudah, efkachet enai, I will open my eyes, meaning to protect Yehudah. So some of the medieval commentaries suggest that Yehudah was actually in a real bind because they were forced by the other nations to besiege Jerusalem, which is the capital city of Yehudah. So there's a suggestion which fits with the words of this pasuk, this chapter, that Yehudah was actually unwittingly part of this siege, and they didn't know what to do. So here, Hashem is saying, even though I'm going to create this confusion and panic among the horses of all the other nations, my eyes will be open towards Yehudah. And it seems that Yehudah then steps up to the plate and decides to protect Jerusalem. And they're described here as a lapid eish ba'amir, like they're like a fire that's thrown into the sheaves because they become the destroying force. And ultimately, through Hashem and through them, Jerusalem is saved. And in Pasuk Zion actually says, not only in the way that they're saved, there's a real sensitivity here, v'hoshia Hashem et o'alei Yehudah b'rishonah. Yehuda, Judah as a whole, is saved first. Laman lo tigdal tiferet beit Yehuda v'tiferet Yoshev Yerushalayim al Yehuda, so that no one would say that Beit David, which is the monarchy, or the people who live in Jerusalem are holier than the people, you know, the people of the capital city are holier than the people who live in Judah as a whole. So out of sensitivity for that perception, Judah is actually saved first. Okay. Now, it's a glorious perek. This section ends with Pasuk Yud, the first part of Pasuk Yud, verse 10. V'shafachti al Beit David v'al Yoshev Yerushalayim ruachin v'tachanunim. Hashem says that I will pour over the house of David and on all the people who dwell in Jerusalem a spirit of grace and a spirit of kindness and compassion. It's really a beautiful ending. But then the parak takes actually an interesting turn, and it's not that anything sort of bad happens to them. The war, it seems, is ended. But then the people look around and they see that somebody was killed, somebody significant, and they have a strong reaction. And this is the end of Pasuk Yud, where they say, when they see that who was killed, v'safdu alav, they will mourn over him. Like there's someone specific here. Kimaspeid al hayachid, v'hamer alav kehamer al habachor. The way that someone would eulogize an only child, or the way that someone would mourn over their oldest child. So it seems that in this war, there was a loss of somebody significant. And the Pasuk continues with a very enigmatic verse, which we're going to come back to. But it says, Bayomahu yigdal hamaspeid b'Yerushalayim, kimispad hadad rimon b'vigat megidon. On that day, because everybody is mourning and eulogizing that person, it will be a eulogy that would be as great as the eulogy of Hadad Rimon in Bikat Megidon. We have no idea who that is. So, no surprise, lots of different possibilities of who we're talking about when it says Hadad Rimon Bikat Megidon, and who actually died here. Chazal actually suggests, and we'll come back to this idea, that it was Mashiach ben Yosef who died here. We have a tradition that at the time of redemption, and certainly these prekim are talking about time of redemption, we have a tradition that first we'll have the arrival of Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach who comes from the line of Judah. That Mashiach will die, and then he will be followed by Mashiach ben David, the Mashiach who comes from the line of Judah. Okay, so let's stick with this for a little bit. Who died? Why was the mourning so intense? And why was it like the Hesped, the eulogy of Hadad Rimon Bivigat Megidon? So there's a fascinating Gemara in Megillah, Daf Gimel, where it talks about Targum Yonatan. Now, Targum Yonatan was a translator, the Targum. So Yonatan translated this verse. And the way that Yonatan translated this verse of Zechariah was, on that day, there will be a great eulogy in Jerusalem, like the eulogy of Achav, who was a king of Israel in the first temple period, who was killed by Ben-Hadad, Hadad Rimon. So that's why it says, going back to the words of that strange pasuk, Hadad Rimon is a reference to King Achav. And then, why does it say Bidkat Megiddo? Well, that is a reference to the eulogy that was said for Yoshiyahu, who was a righteous king of Yehuda, also in the First Temple period. And he was killed by Paro Necho on the plains of Megiddo. So, Yonatan explains this pasuk to mean that it's kind of as on that day there will be a great eulogy like the eulogies, two eulogies of Hadad like the eulogies that the people gave for King Achav of Israel, of Yisrael, and the eulogy that people gave of Yoshiyahu, who was the king of Judah. Now, it's fascinating to put these two leaders together, even though, in a way, they were both very successful, but in very different ways. Achav was an evil king. He's the one who's pursued, you know, by Eliyahu. He's married to Jezebel, and he idolatry, trying to kill the prophets. He has a few moments of tshuva, but otherwise he mostly is, you know, building up Israel politically and their material strength, but doing everything he can to, on a spiritual level, bring Israel to the ground. On the other hand, Yoshiyahu is kind of the exact opposite. Yoshiyahu was a who lived in the times of, you might remember him from Yirmiyahu. Yoshiyahu was the one who found the Torah scroll after the people were really lost and spiritually, and he had a huge tshuva reformation. But politically and like materially, he was really not savvy. And even going when he, why was he in Megiddo when he was killed by Paranacho? He went mistakenly. It was a bad political move. And that's why he was killed by Paranacho. So Yonatan translated this and he said, the eulogy that will be heard then is like the eulogy of Ahab and Yoshiyahu. So why is it like the eulogy of King Ahab and King Yoshiyahu? And why are we even putting those together? So there's a very beautiful modern understanding of this, which was by Rav Kook. Rav Kook, actually, who was a new rabbi in Yafo in the year 1904, was asked to give a eulogy at the death of Theodor Herzl. Now, interestingly, Rav Kook had Rav Kook struggled because he was criticized by people who said, how could you give a eulogy for Theodor Herzl? Yes, he's the father of modern Zionism, but he was a totally secular Zionist who wanted no religion to be a part of the establishment of the State of Israel. So Rav Kook gave a fascinating eulogy, and in the eulogy, the whole eulogy is based on Zechariah. That's why he actually calls it Hamas Peid B'Yerushalayim, which comes specifically from Zechariah. And in it, Rav Kook talks about the two kochot, the two powers that are both necessary in the Jewish people. The first one is the power of strength, the power to be like other nations. It's a universal idea. It's a universal strength that is necessary in order to be a full-on nation. The other strength, though, is the strength of spirituality. It's the strength of being guided by Torah. The reason we're doing all this is because we're meant to be a nation that is in Or LaGoyim. It's a light for all the other nations. It's a light that we're guided by Hashem and by Torah. Ideally, these two strengths were always meant to go together, but they were separated after the split of the kingdom, after Shlomo, and we had the 10 tribes who were led by Ephraim, which was the power of Yosef, and they were represented the physical koach of Yisrael, the physical strength of Israel. And then on the other side, the tribes of Yehuda represented the spiritual soul of Am Yisrael. Now, by the way, neither of them, because they were separated, neither of them was successful because the kings of Israel were only focused on the material, who represented material strength. That wasn't enough. They were losing the soul of the nation. And Yehuda, the tribes of Yehuda, because they didn't have the material side, they needed to be so strong spiritually and to replace what was missing, and they failed. They did not reach that goal. In the ideal, what would happen is that the physical would create the stage for the spiritual. The spiritual would have to be stronger than the physical. It would need to be led by the spiritual, but the physical is absolutely a necessary strength. By the way, when we spoke about the Ani Rochev al Chamor, right, and we talked about that as a symbol of Mashiach, that Mashiach will be the Anav, the humble, the Ruach, the spirit, riding on the Chomriyut, on the material, right? The idea that material and spiritual are both necessary, but the spiritual has to be a leader. So what needs to happen at the time of Geulah? So Rav Kook talks about the fact that there needs to be a Mashiach ben Yosef. It needs to be somebody who runs the, who cares about the politics, who cares about the material, who cares about the universal success. That's necessary, but it needs to be guided by the spiritual. It needs to be guided by the Yehuda portion of things. And ultimately, we'll have two Mashiach, Mashiach ben Yosef, representing the physical, then Mashiach ben Yosef will die and will be followed by Mashiach ben David. Now, in this eulogy, what Rav Kook stressed, and why did he give it at the death of Theodor Herzl, he was making a point about Zionism, which is that Theodor Herzl, who represented the building up of the universal strength and the universal and the political identity of Israel, was absolutely necessary. So his pushback to, let's say, the people coming from his right who were saying, why would you give a hesped about Herzl? He was saying, how could I not give a hesped about Herzl? This was a necessary strength. But on the other hand, he was turning to the secular Zionists in discussing this, and he said, we need the physical is important, but the physical always needs to be guided by the spiritual. So when Chazal talk about this death of that this person who died, who they're lamenting, is the Mashiach ben Yosef, they're talking about that physical power, but then it is meant to be followed by the Mashiach ben David, which actually will actualize both of those kohot together. The Mashiach ben David is meant to reunite the physical and the spiritual. The split was never meant to happen. So in Rav Kook's reading of this, which was a beautiful message to Zionism, his reading of this is that this chapter in Zechariah is talking about a victory, and this chapter in Zechariah is talking about redemption. But part of the redemption process is the reuniting for us, for the Jewish nation, of the physical and the spiritual strengths that were so isolated in a time period of exile. And Rav Kook's words, it's actually very famous eulogy, and his words actually still resonate very much today, where we know how important the political and physical state of Israel is, but we also know how important the soul of the nation is, and that physical and spiritual is always guided by Torah and mitzvot and our relationship with Hashem. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Gilbert Carcenti, Menachem Mendel Ben Saud.